The Social Screenwriters Podcast. The Social Screenwriters Podcast. The Social Screenwriters Podcast. Where Andy talks to people he met on the internet.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to episode 41 of the Social Screenwriters Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Compton, and today on the show we have a very special guest. Her name is Carly Agrimedo. Carly is an Aussie queer writer living in Canada. As a kid, she would dress up in her mom's clothes and perform scenes from her favorite movies. These days, she's focused on writing women-led coming-of-age narratives while incorporating a degree of magic realism. Her aim is to entertain audiences from all across the world through her eccentric characters and unconventional stories. Carly's goal is to show the world that women can be messy and flawed, too. Carly and I have been friends on Twitter for, I guess, like 4 years now, basically like pandemic time, like most people. I met a ton of writers on Twitter around like the start of quarantine, but we've known each other, we've been cool, and she's been writing and doing cool things this whole time. One of her scripts that we talk about a little bit later in the episode, Abigail Franklin's Improbability of Stardom, is in the top 1% on Coverfly, and it's got some cool accolades. She was semi-finalist in Script Pipeline and Screencraft and a few other contests, so she's been doing great. And it was cool to finally get to talk to her. One really interesting thing about Carly too is that her day job is working in script clearances, so we talk a lot about that too, because as a filmmaker, as a screenwriter one, but as a filmmaker too, I am really interested in that, like the legal side of screenwriting and story and what we're allowed to show and what we're not allowed to show, what we're allowed to say and not say. But yeah, we have a great conversation in this episode, and I hope you guys enjoy it. If you do, please take to Twitter and say something you liked, say something smart that Carly said, say something dumb that I said. If you are watching on YouTube, please give a like and subscribe to my channel. By the way, this one will not be a video episode. Something happened with the video file. It got corrupted, so this is audio only this week, just like it used to be. I'm still going to throw it on YouTube, because why not? If you want to donate to the show, you can do that at the link in my bio at Social Writer Pod on Twitter and Instagram. There's a link there if you want to donate a couple bucks to listen to the episode. I really, really appreciate that. If not, that's okay too. I hope you enjoy the episode. That's about it. I'm sorry it's been such a long wait. It's been a few weeks since the last episode dropped. I've just been really busy, and I'm really trying to hit the writing thing hard right now. And I'm making some progress. Like, when I get done recording this and posting it, I'm going to hop right back into an outline that I've been working on for a new feature this year. So I hope you guys are also on your writing stuff right now. It's still relatively early in 2024, so if you haven't gotten off to a good start, you can just start tomorrow and get it moving. I hope you do. I hope that everybody's out there killing it, and I hope we're all millionaires in 2025. That's realistic. In 1 year, everyone listening to this episode is going to be a millionaire. I hope that happens. Okay, I'm going to let you listen to the episode with Carly Agrimedo. Carly Agrimedo. Yeah? Is that how you say it?
Yeah, you did. You pronounced it correctly.
Really? First try.
Yeah, you did. You did. Well done.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, so Carly Agrimedo, it's nice to meet you. Mm-hmm. Finally, we've known each other forever and been very friendly on the internet for years, but we've never Zoomed.
Never Zoomed. Voice noted a few times, but never Zoomed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's nice to meet you finally, to see you in a moving picture.
You too. Although I've seen your skate videos.
Yeah, that's true.
So I have some really moving.
Yeah, true. I don't know. Yeah, I've seen your Instagram stories. Okay, so we've seen each other in moving images, but not like this. And I'm glad to have you on the show. This is exciting.
Thanks for having me.
Of course.
I'm actually really nervous.
Are you? No, don't be.
I'm not very good with like Zoom or like talking to people without a phone, basically. Like, I need to be texting. I can't like just chat. It's weird.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, we're going to change that today because if we don't, it's going to be an awful episode.
<You're>
it's not going to happen. I know it's going to be great.
Okay, cool.
Cool. I'll guide the way. But yeah, it's great to finally be chatting here. And, you know, before I was kind of, for a little bit, I was reading people's bios during the episode, but I found it's kind of better if I tee it up before the interview. Mm-hmm. In post.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't do that, but you are an Aussie writer. You're in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Down under.
Mm-hmm.
And you are a queer writer who writes coming of age stories with like hints of magical realism, and you usually like to show women characters in all of their flawed messiness and to show the world that that's okay to put on the big screen. Yeah. Which I agree with too. So that's just a little bit of background on you to get started. But mm-hmm. I want to take it all the way back. Okay. Before Twitter, before the pandemic, before we became friends, Carly, how did you get started in screenwriting?
Oh God. It goes back a very long time. I used to write a lot of like plays, I guess, for my friends to perform in like primary school, but I didn't think anything of it because at the time I wanted to be an actress. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm writing it for me. I'm going to act and you guys are going to be my supporting roles. But I didn't think anything of writing because growing up, I guess, with like Italian parents, it was very much like you got to find a job that like, or a career that has stability, and anything in the creative field, no.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. So like in high school as well, I had my English teacher who asked me one time to write a script over the school holidays that we would perform in class. And I was like, okay, sure, fine. Didn't really think anything of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
She sat down with me after school holidays and walked me through it. And she told me the reason why she asked me to do that was she really liked my voice. And she thought that I could have a career in like writing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was like, nah, no, that's fine. I'm going to be in public relations. That's my writing avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched the movie Her by Spike Jonze.
Oh, it's one of my favorites. Yeah, I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was at university studying to be a primary school teacher, and I mm-hmm. hated every moment of it. And I really wanted to do something in the creative field. I was like, maybe I'll go back into acting, maybe I'll go back to dancing, singing, whatever. Never again didn't think about writing. And then I watched Her. And I realized I want to do this. I want to create something that has such an impact on people because it really impacted me.
Yeah.
I think it was just a beautiful, beautiful story, a beautiful mm-hmm. romantic story.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to do it. I'm going to focus on writing. I've been told that I'm good at it. So I did. Mm-hmm. And now I actually cannot imagine myself doing anything else ever.
Yeah.
And this is what I want to do. I want to make movies and create.
God, I love that.
Yeah
I feel like that's so many of us too, is that like you not even talking about the like, you know, the am I gonna make it or not, whatever, but like the thing that's just like, I can't see myself doing anything else, like this is the only thing. And I don't know, I guess I kind of had that in like earlier wants in life, like I wanted to be a pro skateboarder and that didn't work out. I wanted to be that didn't work out, but neither of those ever felt like this. It's weird.
Mm.
It's like the calling, and I'm sure that's how it feels for you too, like, oh, this is my thing.
Yeah, exactly. Like I feel at peace when I'm sitting down in front of my laptop and writing, and also when I'm just like thinking about it and dreaming about it, I just feel like this is where I'm meant to be and what I'm meant to be doing, and it just feels so peaceful to me, like this is it, this is my life.
Yeah, for
just
sure.
Create and write.
Yeah, totally agree. And just like loving movies, loving stories, like it's you know it if the bug catches you, like for sure, you know. Like,
yeah.
Right on. Hold on. So, okay. So that happens when you're in college and then so you see Her and you're like, this is what I want to do. So then like, how do you jump into it? Like, did you buy like a book? Did you just start writing, start trying to write? Like, you know, what was the road to get to like where, like even say like 2020, whenever we met, and also you and I, I'm sure you as well, met a bunch of writers at the same time, because I didn't really start using Twitter like that until we were all locked in our homes.
Yeah, same. Yeah. So I basically like researched it. I was like, how do I become a screenwriter? Like good old Google search.
Mm-hmm.
And it popped up. There was a course at RMIT, the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. It's actually where I studied public relations.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a diploma in professional screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading up about how that was kind of where a lot of Australian writers got their start as well from that course. Mm-hmm. So basically I applied for that and I had to actually submit no scripts. We weren't allowed to submit any scripts. We had to submit short stories and essays and poems that we had written. And so I did that and I had a panic attack. We had to do, so I had to submit it. And from that, I had to get an interview. And if I passed the interview, then I got into the course. Mm. And getting the interview was the hard part because then you had to like, they had to be impressed with your writing. So I submitted my work and I got the interview and had a massive panic attack because I was like, oh my God, this is it. If I don't get in, then this is like the end of my life.
Yeah.
I got into the interview. I said the stupidest shit. One of the interviewers asked me who my favorite writer was. And I said myself.
Oh.
It was so embarrassing. But then I got accepted that evening. So they sent me in. Another evening and said, we want you to be in the course. I was like, oh my God, okay, I didn't screw it up that much.
Yeah.
And yeah, and then I was there for 2 years. And then, because it was a diploma, I wanted to have an actual degree behind me because I dropped out of all my courses, dropped out of arts, I dropped out of primary education, dropped out of public relations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a creative writing degree with a major in screenwriting.
Nice. Wait, hang on. Creative writing degree with a, oh my God, shut up. Holy shit, I'm sorry. Phone started.
No, you're fine.
I have no friends. That's the first time that's ever happened. hold on, let me mute this. Okay, so wait, a degree in creative writing and then a major mm-hmm. in screenwriting.
Mm-hmm. So you major in like screenwriting and then you minor in like prose writing or anything like that. So it's all different types of writing.
Medium. Got it. Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Right on. That's crazy.
Yeah, our university is different to how college is for you guys.
Yeah, I know. I was like, is this some freaky Australian shit that I don't understand?
Yeah, it's different for us.
Yeah, okay, cool. I noticed whenever you called it primary school, what grades is that for you?
Prep to year six. So that's like what, 5 to about 12?
Okay, yeah. For us, that's middle school and high school.
Yeah. We just have primary and then high school.
Got it.
And then university or TAFE.
Got it. Cool. Yeah, that's a super funny story too about saying yourself as your favorite writer. But like, I mean, I get it though. When you're on the spot, sometimes you just say something and immediately you're like, what? Why would I say that?
Yeah. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah, that's hilarious. How old were you at the time?
I would have been about 24.
Yeah, 24 year olds are allowed to say stupid stuff. It doesn't matter. No one cares.
Yeah, my frontal lobe hadn't formed yet.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. All right. So that's also interesting. That's so interesting. You're from Australia. But no, it really is. That's a genuine comment by me. But I was going to say, who are some I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, but like,
okay,
who are some Aussie like writers or filmmakers that maybe came from that school? Because like the only Aussie filmmaker I can think of off the top of my head, I think Jennifer Kent, who made The Babadook. Is she Aussie?
Yeah, she is Australian, yeah.
Yeah, and she's awesome. And also one of my favorite singers. Oh my God. I'm blanking on her name. Julia Jacklin. Do you know Julia Jacklin? Oh, she's cool.
Oh.
She's a really, really beautiful singer-songwriter. But anyway, yeah, so Jennifer Kent. But who are some others? Do you know any off the top of your head? You don't have to, but I'm just curious.
They're not like known. They just like do I guess like freelance work for like Australian TV. Australian TV, I don't really want to get into it, but it's not in the same system the way it is in the US.
Uh-huh.
Where they have like writers room and stuff. It's quite different. Although I think maybe we're leaning more towards the US system, but previously it was kind of like one writer.
Got it. Got it. Almost like an auteur for a TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Cool. Yeah. Well, because that's interesting too. Like, I know for a fact you're the first Aussie to come on this show. but
oh really? Oh god!
I think I maybe had like maybe one or two people who were outside the States, and I think they were Canadian. Mm. I'm almost positive. I think Todd Foley lived in Canada. Yeah. Okay. So he did.
Yeah,
for sure.
We live in the same province.
Oh, really?
Okay. I also live in Vancouver.
Okay, yeah, because was he British Columbia? Where is he at?
Yeah, British Columbia.
Okay, I can't believe I got that right. Todd, that's how much I think about you. I still know where you're from. I remember. Cool.
The Superior province.
Yeah. Okay, so, I'm going to lean on that, though, a lot that, like, I don't know, it's just interesting to me, the Aussie film and TV landscape compared to America. Mm. I mean, that even just for starters, that TV thing is interesting.
It's definitely changed. Like when I was growing up, now there's more work getting made, and that's because of like Netflix and other streaming services. Yeah. Now there's kind of like quotas that kind of have to be met. But previously we only had like network television and not much was really getting made. Mostly reality TV was getting made, still kind of is, but now there's actually a lot more narrative. I mean, Boy Swallows Universe just came out and that's huge. That's gotten really rave reviews. And that's an Australian show.
Nice. Sick. Mm. Yeah. I feel like there's a few, like I said, between some musicians that I've heard who are from Australia and then like someone like Jennifer Kent, who I really admire. I dropped my pen. That's why I'm being weird.
That's right.
One second. Okay, got it. I just feel like there's a lot of like really awesome, super creative, original people in Australia that, because that's the thing too, is that like you said, you know, to name a couple writers or directors from Australia, it would be kind of hard to name mainstream types. And it's true. I mean, coming from, you know, anyone internationally, like Korean filmmakers or English filmmakers, to break over to the States, you're already pretty huge, like where you're from.
So
it makes sense that, you know, that maybe we wouldn't know some of the people that you would name, but other Aussies would be like, oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, especially with like actors, everyone who's gotten famous overseas now, I'm like, they got their start in Neighbours.
Do you know
one else would know that.
Yeah. Do you know any actors off the top of your head? Because I'm trying to think of some, too. I know there's so many actors who make it big in American film that I'm shocked when I hear an interview and they have like a thick accent. And I'm like, no way, because they did an American accent in all their American films. Florence Pugh being one of them. Toni Collette being another one. But I don't know where Toni Collette's from. She might be New Zealand.
No, she's from Australia. She's from Sydney.
Oh, she is? Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, she's Australian. Jacob Elordi is the most recent one where people don't realize he's Australian.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's Aussie. He just beat up that radio guy.
Yeah.
From all accounts that I've heard about this person, it was not completely unjustified. So we're still on the Elordi train.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'm having t-shirts made for us. cool. All right, Carly. So I want to know, I kind of talked about it in like five words earlier, but how would you describe your brand? It's the question every writer loves to answer in a public forum.
Actually, I remember talking to you about this after listening to one of your episodes. I had another panic attack. Like, what's my brand?
Remember that.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
My brand, I've realized, is considered I love coming of age.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized my brand is like delayed coming of age of like women who don't know what they want to do with their life. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of go on this like journey of like self-exploration until they don't really have like big, like character development. It's quite subtle. But basically by the end, they just kind of realize who they are and what they want. So my brand is very much just kind of like female empowerment, I guess, and like women can be messy and we can make mistakes and it's okay to make mistakes. And I think that's what my brand is just about women and just being messy and queer.
What about like, so there's elements of magical realism as well. Is that just a thing, like to what degree do you think like there's magical realism in your kind of storytelling? Because I became fascinated with magical realism. I had never even heard the term until in 2017. I was in one of my first creative writing classes at community college. That's what we call it in the States. It's poor people college. But I started there, and I had this great professor, Joe Bauman. Shout out Joe Bauman. And he was an author of like fiction, you know, and we were writing like short stories in his class, and he loved magical realism. And that's where I first learned that term. And that for people, if you happen to be listening and don't know what it is, it's a world story set in a world where everything is almost just like the real world that we exist in. But there's just like one thing that's kind of like odd and, you know, fictional. Couldn't exist in this world. Like, you know, everything is real except one guy is a talking horse, like, you know, BoJack Horseman. Well, I guess there's a lot of different characters in that. But, you know, one guy is a crocodile who has a desk job, and everyone treats it as real, as normal. Like, it's not a crazy thing in this world. So I was fascinated by that. But like, you know what? You know, do you lean heavy into it, or for you is it real subtle, like magical realism?
It's very subtle for me. I think my best example for the way I write magical realism is, have you seen Big Fish?
No, I haven't. That's written by John August, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. So it's like one of my favorite movies.
I need to fucking
movies.
See that. Yeah, I know.
I love it so much. It's basically kind of like blending like the real, like real life with kind of like these fantastical elements, I guess, where he's going on like adventures with like, what's it called, like a giant. So it's kind of like using, I guess, symbolism and metaphors in a way that's kind of like fantastical, I guess. I don't have like, you know, like a crocodile or desk or anything, but I do have these kind of these journeys or like these adventures that they go on that just don't seem like they would happen in the real world, but it makes sense for the world that I've created.
Love that. Okay, yeah, so we kind of know about who you are as a writer. Now let's talk about like kind of how you write. So I want to know, Carly, since everyone's routine is unique, can you kind of describe your regular writing routine to me? Like what is the vibe whenever you sit down to write? Like, is it morning? Is it night? Are you inside, outside? Are you at home? Are you at a coffee shop? I've noticed on your Instagram stories a few times you like to write in coffee shops, I think. So what's it usually like for you when you go to write? What's the ideal writing situation?
So for me, so the past 4 years I've been living in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things about living in Vancouver is how beautiful it is and how many like parks there are and urban forests. So one thing I love to do is I actually need to be out in nature when I write. I need to kind of like listen to the sound of the world. So like birds, the wind, the trees and the wind, all that kind of stuff when I write, because it really inspires me. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's usually during the day and I either try a new coffee shop and I sit outside or I go to a park I haven't gone to before and I just spend all day kind of sitting down writing, maybe listen to some music, but really it's just kind of like I create my own little bubble in this like park or whatever in the outside and just enjoy it. And that's how I do it. That's what I do.
I love that. I don't know if I've written out in nature in any way. Like, I think the most nature I've written outside is like just outside of my school when I was in school.
Oh yeah.
Which doesn't count. It was like in a city, but no, that's interesting. I could see that. Cause like sometimes, I mean, weirdly, I'll like listen to headphones with like nature sounds while I'm writing. I bet it's amazing to go out in the nature and write. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's so pretty there too. So you just constantly, I'm always inspired by nature. So just being out there and just kind of how it relates to my characters as well. So that's what I like. I need to immerse myself in it.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Love that. Okay. So, that's how you write. Before we talk about your process too much, I do want to talk about your day job. So you do script clearances as a profession. So I don't know much about the world of script clearances at all. And if you just want to like kind of tell us about what you do and what goes into it.
Sure. This is actually quite an important process in the filmmaking. So I actually didn't know what script clearances was until I moved over to Canada. Mm-hmm. But basically, our job is to make sure production does not get sued.
Yes.
So
hugely important.
We like to emphasize, give us the script, don't before filming. If you film whatever it is and then you come to us with the film, mm-hmm. there's a high chance that there's a lot of stuff in your film that will not get cleared. But yes. Basically, we read scripts and we break them down. We pull apart names, locations, business names, products, catchphrases, pretty much anything that could have a brand attached to it or mm-hmm. Like a name attached to it. Mm-hmm. And we do research to ensure that there wouldn't be any conflict mm-hmm. So that productions won't get sued. So, for example, your main character could be named, we'll say, Bob Smith. Mm-hmm. And Bob Smith lives in Los Angeles mm-hmm. and he is a lawyer. Mm-hmm. So we look to see if there's a Bob Smith in Los Angeles who is a lawyer. If there is none, that's fine. If mm-hmm. there's one or two, then we give that to the lawyer and the lawyer can deal with it. Mm-hmm. And if there's three plus, usually then it's fine to use that name. Mm-hmm. Unless it's like derogatory. If it's a derogatory character, then that's like a whole other element. But mm-hmm. basically, we just read scripts, mm-hmm. pull it apart, make sure that there won't be any sort of conflict and no one will get sued. And then you can actually make the film or the show, whatever.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Here's an example that I thought of as you were talking about that.
Yeah.
I have a script, a pilot I wrote where at one point, two characters, one of them starts it, the other one finishes it, but they say out loud the lyrics to a famous Eminem song from the 8 Mile movie. They just say it out loud. And I forget, one of them's like, what is the words? He's like, you only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow. And then this girl's like, this opportunity comes once in a lifetime, yo. Would that be a concern? Like probably a big one, right?
Yeah, usually we say for stuff like that, again, we kind of like leave it up to the lawyers, but we usually make a note that's like permission may be required to use this lyric in this production. Mm-hmm. Usually permissions are like fine. We've had instances where like costumes wanted to use brands and you just mm-hmm. like basically ask for permission and stuff. And sometimes, especially like Hallmarks, it's usually kind of okay. Mm-hmm. But usually for stuff like that, same with the likeness of someone as well. So like say if you have like a poster of say Jacob and Lordy up in like your whatever it is, then again it's like permission may be needed to use the likeness of Jacob and Lordy in this scene sort of thing, as well as whoever took the photograph. So you might need permission from the photographer. So it's a lot of like little things that you actually don't think about when you write. Like now that I know about clearances, when I write stuff, I'm like, oh my God, is this going to be a clearance nightmare? Yeah. And if it is, I'm like, I know how hard it is. So I kind of like try and avoid it. And sometimes you can't, and that's fine. And that's not to say like completely change your writing. Sure. But just kind of like be mindful that sometimes just don't get attached to names, don't get attached to products or business names. Because sometimes one might exist in this world.
Yeah. And I would imagine, too, it's different, like, in Canada than it is to the States. Like, you know, laws differ, right, in a big way, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Your laws are a lot better. Like, you have fair use law, which Canada, I think, just brought in, but they don't have case law for it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you guys do. So, like, fair use is usually, like, one you can really, like, get around, as well as parody. Parody is a big one.
Yeah, parody is
You can usually get away with parody. Yeah, you can usually get away with, like, parody. Mm-hmm.
I wonder even if that Eminem reference that I brought up, too, would fall under parody because it's clearly a joke.
Maybe, potentially.
I don't know. Maybe. It's not really, like, you know, we're making fun of Eminem or anything, like, which you can get away with under parody, which is great here. Sometimes I'm shocked at what you can get away with parody in America, but it's also a beautiful thing for people who like comedy. So I was gonna say too, I have another, this isn't like a question really, but a funny story maybe just for people listening, like a cautionary tale. the second short film that I ever made when I was in film school. The first one is so dog shit, no one will ever see it. And it was all my fault. It wasn't anyone who worked on the film. It was all me. But the second one, there's a scene where we were shooting in my friend Larry, who's an actor in like all of my movies. We were shooting in his house, and there was a scene where he had to walk into his living room. And at the time it was like four dudes living at this house. So they have like posters on the walls and like all stuff just in the living room. So we took all that stuff down and then we shoot the scene. And I have no idea how this happened. We shoot the scene and I only realize in post-production when the movie's done shooting that there's a Whiplash poster on the wall, the movie Whiplash. Clear as day. And I'm like, how did none of us catch that? Like, how did no one be like, do we want the Whiplash poster like front and center in the frame? But we accidentally left it in, and we like explored all these options to like digitally remove it, but because the actor passes in front of it, it was like really difficult to track and everything, so we didn't get to do it. And we just left it in, and like it's on YouTube, so I'm hoping that like Damien Chazelle doesn't come after me for that one, but or whoever what studio made that movie. But that's like one thing, you know, that we feared putting it online. And then when we submitted to festivals, I actually cut another version of it where I cut that shot out, just that shot. And it sucks because it's a little bit of a needed shot to get from point A to point B for our character. But anyway, just a dumb thing dealing with copyright. And I do have one question, and I don't know if you'll know, because this might be an American law thing versus Canada law, but using products in a movie like Apple or I'm driving a Honda, and I'm very clearly driving a Honda. So I've always feared that, and I've always tried to make things as generic as possible. But we were shooting a short film last summer, and a friend of mine who works on a lot of sets, union sets, he said, and I looked it up, and it, from everything I could read on the internet, it seems to be true that it's not against the law to show brands in your film as long as the product isn't being portrayed in like a negative light, as long as it's being shown as intended. Like if you are driving a Honda car, you can show it's a Honda as long as it's just driving and not like sputtering out and breaking down on the side of the road, maybe. Like same with Apple.
100%.
So is that's true?
Yeah, that's true. That's another thing that we discuss when we like send off our script reports is basically if you show like a car, you just make sure it's not in a derogatory way. I know with, I think it's Apple, the villain or like the antagonist or the bad character can never use an Apple product. They don't want to be attached to that. And another big one, actually, license plates. So you know how sometimes you see license plates on screen?
My license plate has been in my movies a few times.
You have to get those cleared because that license plate that you create could actually be attached to a real car, like a real person's like registration. So I know in California specifically for films, they have a list of license plates you can use. And then there's actually been, sorry to hijack, but there's been really interesting situations where I've actually had to call the Pentagon to get clearance for a name for someone who has worked in like the military or something. And situation, it's really interesting. So like if you have a character that's worked in the military or whatever, you have to get approval from those areas. There was one time I needed to get a name approved for a show, which I'm not going to say, but it's on Netflix.
And Stranger Things.
Stranger Things.
Orange is the New Black.
I had to call the Pentagon. But they don't accept numbers outside numbers. I don't know how, but I somehow got through to this one person and I was like, I need to get in contact with like your media advisor. And they gave me his personal mobile number. And so I called it, not realizing it's his personal mobile number. And I called him and he's like, how did you get my number? And I was like, oh, like your assistant or whatever gave me your number. I just need to get clearance for a name. I work in like production. Yeah. And he was like, okay, I'll call you back in like an hour. And I was like, this is so weird. Like, I'm so sorry. Like, anyone can give this guy's number out and like get it?
Yeah, assistant got fired.
Probably. But also another one is phone numbers. So you know how there's always the 555? That's a number you can use because that doesn't exist. But phone numbers is another one that you have to clear, as well as addresses. So like stuff you wouldn't even think of. Like I remember like growing up thinking, like when they would say like a phone number on like a show, I'd be like, oh my god, that poor person, whoever's number it is, probably getting a million calls all the time from people like, I watched this show that your number was on. But no, they're all fake. And they're because of us.
Yeah.
We have to make a list of them and we give you ones that are cleared and stuff as well.
That is super interesting. Me using my license plate is okay, right? Because I'm not gonna sue myself, right?
No, you're not gonna sue yourself, no.
Yeah, okay, cool.
But there's like some DMVs who basically tell us you can use whatever as long as the combination is different. Mm-hmm. So say if like a combination in like Missouri is like ABC 123, you can do like A1C3D4 sort of thing, and that's a combination that'll never exist in Missouri. So basically we can create license plates out of that, and then production can use them.
Cool. I wonder if Missouri even has them, because Missouri is so, well, maybe now we're going to be a little more film friendly because we just got film tax incentives here. We used to have them, and then in 2013 they were taken away. And I really theorize that part of it is like just Missouri. It's like a red state out here. It's really conservative. I really think part of it was them wanting conservative Hollywood to stay out of here, like the liberal elites.
Possibly. I don't know.
That's just my theory, but we're coming back strong now. That's all really, really fascinating. Honestly, that's super interesting and important for people to know.
It's very important.
All right, so we talked a little about clearances. Let's jump back into you and your writing. So let's talk about your writing.
Okay.
Carly Agrimito. Let's say that you have a new idea, okay?
Yeah.
Do you jump into an outline? Do you kind of just sit around taking notes for a while? Do you write a log line? Do you need a title before you can start writing? Or do you just start writing pages? Like, what's the first thing that you're doing when you have a brand new idea?
Oh God, I dream about it. I daydream like crazy. So I daydream the story, the characters, the world for like months on end. And my notes app in my phone basically is like the ramblings of a mad woman. So whenever I'm dreaming of something and I like it, I write it down in my notes app. And I basically do that for months until I feel like I have an outline of an idea. And then after that, I kind of like compile the notes and then I just kind of flesh them out. With like scenes, dialogue as well. And then I sit on that for a bit and I think about that. And then, I basically just then jump into an outline. I never used to be an outline girl. I used to be someone who's jumped into writing the script and they were always really garbage because I didn't really kind of fully form the idea. It was just like scenes more than it was like a story. But now that I actually like fully write out an outline and I write it in the act. So I always focus on like act one and then act two and act three. And then when I actually go to write the script, then I just start with act one, act two, act three. I don't just kind of like move around in each act. I kind of like have to go through it.
Yeah, me too. I write chronologically for sure. So when you outline, because I was the same exact way, I didn't know, I feel like most of us probably are, because most of us don't even like understand outlining in the beginning, like don't know how to do it, so we just are dipping our toes in the water like blind. But I was the same way, and I'm wondering, do you use any kind of like specific outline when you outline, any kind of like specific structure? Like some people do, like, you know, fucking Robert McKee, whatever, four act, I don't know what he does, four act, you know, structure. And then like some people follow like the Blake Snyder save the cat thing. That's what I do. And it's people make fun of me a lot for it. But there's like, there's, you know, there's so many different ways to outline. Is there any specific thing that you follow, or do you just kind of like know the beats of a story, like, you know, and how you want to execute them?
Yeah, I basically just write the beats of the story. I don't like follow any one thing. I just do kind of my own thing. I just kind of have to like get it out and follow my own beats. But I kind of do it in a way that's like, I do it in an Excel spreadsheet. I don't know if anyone else does that, but I'm like obsessed with spreadsheets, but I basically kind of, that's how I outline, is that I use like formulas basically. So I do like act one and then I'd write the beats for that. And then act two and write the beats for that. And then kind of see how they will connect and how like act one and act three kind of like meet.
Interesting. In an Excel document, I'm sure that some other person out there, some type A person probably does that. But yeah, I don't even know how to use Excel. I did one college course where they taught it to us and I passed the class. I got an A, but it was hard as shit. And I don't understand it to this day, Excel, but I'm sure if you have a job that uses Excel, like you know, you learn it.
It's pretty easy to learn once you know all the tips and tricks.
Oh, well, thanks for insulting my intelligence. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. No, I am dumb about that. But no, yeah, I'm sure someone else does that. That's really interesting, though, to use Excel to outline. Okay, so we know that you are an outline person now. So then, on average, how long does it take you to write a first draft of, like, you write features. Do you do any TV?
When I started, I did. The only TV that I write is children's animation.
Oh, interesting. Aiko, who was on the show, who we know.
That's actually, we became friends.
Oh, really? Cool.
I don't really write TV. I feel like maybe I should. I don't know, but I'm more of a movie girl. I like movies.
Me too. I'm also a movie girl.
That's what I do.
And I'm thinking more and more about TV lately too. Honestly, I have been. Part of it too.
Any
is
particular
that
genre?
Comedy, half hour comedies.
Okay. That's true. Yeah.
But the thing I noticed, because I've written one half hour comedy, and I don't know if TV people would probably fucking hate me for saying this, but I feel like for me, writing a half hour comedy is just writing the first act of a comedy feature and stopping, because you're writing the pilot. So you're teeing up an adventure, a story that's going to continue, you know, through in a movie, it would be two more acts, you know, but you're writing basically the first 25 to 30 minutes. That's how I look at it. And that is tempting to me in the sense that I do love comedy and I do love TV, but I love the idea of only writing 25% of what I usually do, writing an entire feature.
That's a really cool way of looking at it. I've never thought of it that way.
Thank you very much. I thought so too. I bet that TV people are going to come for me for saying that, for simplifying it. I mean, obviously.
Oh, no, you're going to be the new... I was going to say, you're going to be the new screenwriter, Twitter villain.
Yeah, I'm going to be the main character someday. I haven't really been so far. Maybe, one time, and I don't want to talk about it. But
time you're talking about, too.
Yeah, for listeners, know that I didn't do anything horrible. I was brought into
something. Andy didn't do anything horrible.
Yeah, I don't need to be canceled, but I was roped into something that, I mean, I kind of put myself into the situation to be roped into it. But
that was also season one pandemic as well. So everyone was on edge during that time.
Yeah, it was the craziest season that we had. Although, I vowed to never get into screenwriting Twitter drama on this show, because I think it's just like, I feel like it can be kind of lame. But I'm trying to think of the topic of what it was the other day. There was a big one the other day. A big screenwriting Twitter thing, drama thing.
The Nickel Fellowship. Was it Nickel Fellowship?
Yeah. What was it? Yeah. We don't need to. Yeah.
And before that,
we don't need to bring that into this.
No, before that though, it was Page Count.
Oh, that's right. Oh yeah, yeah. The one person saying like, it's okay to have 190 page features.
Yeah.
You can, if you're one of the most famous screenwriters in the world, you can. But if you're one of us, probably shouldn't. You should probably get that page count as close to 90 as you can, honestly, if you're one of us. Mine sit at 110, You know, I never go over 110. That's my new rule. But
yeah, that's a good rule.
Yeah, but it's tough to. I mean, like, what did I see just the other day? I saw a horror movie.
Was it
mine
at 151? Oh,
it was. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, "What the fuck is this? This fucking bullshit." No, but yeah, but you posted that like while like explaining in the tweet, like, I know I need to cut from this. Like, that's I'm not saying like this is such a perfect work. I'm not going to remove one word. It's like, yeah, you've been around the block long enough to know that ain't happening. Okay, cool. So I didn't even give you a chance to talk. We talked about TV pilots. I'm sorry. I hijacked the question from you.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what was the question?
All right. So with features, how long does it usually take you to finish a first draft from like conception of idea to being like the end?
Conception of idea to the end, to the first draft.
Yeah.
Probably like 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. At least for me.
Yeah, I'd say because my recent one, the one that's 151 pages,
mm-hmm.
that took
4 years. No, I'm just kidding.
That's 4 years. That started before I moved back home, which was July. And then I finished the first draft. So we're in February. So July to about the beginning of February, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Is how long it took for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, that's not that long.
No.
Okay. So when the first draft is complete, what is the first thing that you like to do? Do you have a writing group? Do you send it to some trusted friends? Do you put it away for a while and only let your eyes see it? That's what I do until I can do like a second draft that I believe in more before I bring other people into it. Or do you just boldly send it to a contest? I've also done that with a first draft, and it was kind of a waste of money. Yeah, what's the first thing that you're doing when you finish a first draft?
I used to do the straight to contest thing, which was a waste of money. But that was also my early days. But I don't know if you went through this, but in your early days, you thought everything you wrote was kind of like fantastic and the best. And then you read over it years later, and you're like, this is thin. This is garbage. There's nothing good about it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I kind of basically subscribe to like waiting, take your time.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rush. So I finish it and I don't look at it for like a couple weeks, maybe a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go back and I do a second draft. I go like line by line, and that's how I basically shave off like pages of garbage and like fluff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I offer to do script swaps, and I usually script swap with like the same people in the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I get notes. Or I don't have a writer's group, but I have a friend who's in the community who's really good at giving notes. So I give it to him, and I know he takes time to get to it because he's so busy, which is fine. But basically, I don't want to spend money until I know it's in a place where I need to spend money to kind of get notes back, or if it's fine to go to a competition. Because I'm also like, I don't make enough money to constantly submit to competitions or anything like that.
Me either.
But I just find I also love getting actors to read it. So once I'm up to about third or fourth draft, I get my actor friends to read it because they're kind of like the best people to go to when it comes to character. So, and dialogue. So they basically give me really good feedback on how to write like a realistic dialogue or dialogue that kind of relates to the character that I'm writing. So they're like some of my go-tos, and I have a couple of those back in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Man, that's such a good tip. Didn't you do a table read of one of your features with your actor friends?
Did.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. During the strike.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah.
What script was that?
So that was Abigail Franklin's Improbability of Stardom.
Mm-hmm.
Because like during the strike, like everyone else, it was just like kind of in limbo. And being in Vancouver, which is such a production heavy kind of place, everything shut down. It was like nothing to do. So I was out of work. My actor friends were out of work, and we were going to like shoot a scene from it just to kind of get the creative juices flowing. But I thought I'd rather do a table read And then like have an audience and make it like really kind of like interactive.
Yeah.
And so we did that, and it was actually kind of like, it was really, I was so nervous because I had, I was on Zoom as well, so I had friends from Australia watching, but I was so nervous because it's so close to my heart for one. And number two, it's like the first time there's an audience for your work. And I was scared about like, are people going to like laugh in the right spot? So that is it going to be received well?
Oh, yeah.
But actually hearing the actors perform it and what they brought to the character that was different in my head, which was obviously like elevated by an actor's performance, was actually like, it was really cool. And it really, it made me realize like, oh, I can do this. I can actually write and people can actually act my word.
Yep.
And then just like hearing it as well and seeing like, okay, some of the dialogue was changed a bit because it sounded natural to them. And I'm like, okay, maybe then I'm script sort of thing. So that was really cool. And then getting feedback from the audience as well and how it was them. Yeah. So that was cool.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I know. It is terrifying the first time that you show your work in front of people. Yeah, so scary. I've done that with, I haven't had a table read of, well, no, because I've only table read my work with actors who were going to perform it and only like short film stuff.
Yeah.
But I have screened short films and it's fucking terrifying. And when it goes well, it's amazing. It but is. I've bombed before. Luckily, like before I really got into making short films, I had already done like improv, like live improv theater. And I'm really glad that I did that. I'm not doing it anymore just because like I got too busy and it was like, I have to cut the one thing out of my life that is not my future. So I was like, I gotta cut out acting. I'm not an actor. But having the experience of going up and just eating shit and just bombing and just like, it helps. Cause I had tons of great moments doing improv, great shows with great teams, and we just killed it. But then I've had other shows where like literally a scene is going great and I do a walk on and add a joke and it kills everything. And I'm like, and you just feel like the biggest piece of shit. But like going through those experiences and realizing like, you know, I'm still here. I'm alive. I'm not hurt. Like, you know, it's okay. It's good to get, you got to put yourself out there in life. And it's terrifying.
Oh, 100%.
You get stronger every time you do it.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So tell me about that script though, because I've seen that script. I've seen and heard about it on Twitter for a long time. And it seems to be the one that like kind of like placed in a lot of contests for you and stuff. So like, what's the log line? It's Abigail Franklin's Improbability of Stardom.
Stardom. So basically it's a story about a substance abuser, kind of down on her luck girl, she's almost 30. And her best friend, I'm like explaining this poorly. So she grew up with like a stage mom, basically, who convinced her she was a natural born singer. And so her dream in life is to become a famous singer. And her best friend gets engaged and she realizes everyone around her is like getting their shit together and she's still kind of like a dropkick. So she decides to chase her dream of becoming a famous singer, just like her mother wanted her to. But it turns out she actually cannot sing and she's not a natural singer. She naturally sucks. And then so still wanting to chase the dream of becoming a famous performer, she decides to go the avenue of a famous karaoke singer and sign up for the karaoke championships, which is a real competition all around the world. My friend actually competed for Canada. And without like spoiling anything, the karaoke championships are actually, you have to be a good singer to perform. And the whole thing is her belief is that with karaoke, you just gotta like, you go there, you have fun. It doesn't care if you're a good singer or a bad singer. So she's like, I've got this in the bag. I suck. I'm like, this is going to be my chance of making it. But no. Because she can't sing, she's not going to make it. And so she basically decides to follow the path. Like I've said before, like their character journey, like their character arc is really subtle. And so she basically just decides to go for a little bit more achievable goal. And that is the manager at her store sort of thing.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. Nice. It sounds like a very character-driven story too, where like the plot is not as important as the characters what they're going through or experiencing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been called a delayed coming of age by several people. Mm. I kind of just like ran with that. Originally, I thought it was just like a comedy drama, but I was like, I can see how it can be a coming of age of someone kind of like coming into themselves and going on like a journey of self-exploration and being like, okay.
Yeah. Delayed in the sense that. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Like delayed in the sense that because she's turning 30. And usually coming of age is like teenagers.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And hers is like coming into the realization that she doesn't need to chase her mom's dream. She needs to chase her own dream.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I was wondering if that was my question, delayed because of her age. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. I like to think that coming of age can happen at any age. And part of that is because I went through a big coming of age at like 30. So, so maybe that's why I relate to that. But I think like, 50-year-olds, when your kids leave the house, you're having a coming of age moment. You're relearning where's my place in the world and how do I fit into it as this new edition of myself.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was actually saying this to my best friend yesterday. I think one of the reasons why I love coming of age is that I'm constantly like coming of age as well. And I think we never stop basically become like new versions of ourselves. Yeah. Like I moved overseas and like became a whole new person. And then I lost my job and I had to come back to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like starting again sort of thing. And it's just like constant stop and start, but I'm learning new things about myself each time that I'm starting again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Yeah. That's, it's a beautiful way to look at life, honestly. Yeah. We're always reinventing yourself and you should be, you know? Okay, cool. And that's gotten you, I saw it to like, I mean, you've made like semi-finalist in a bunch of like known prominent competitions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's done pretty well.
Still.
Yeah.
That, you kind of like awesome, don't though. Believe it. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Okay, cool. So just talking about Carly the person. So what are some of your hobbies outside of writing that like help keep you sane as you chase this improbable stardom that we're both chasing?
I like that. I never used to be like an outdoorsy girl until I moved overseas, but I love hiking and like going on walks. I love,
man, you go to beautiful places too. On I've just seen from your Instagram story, like gorgeous scenery.
Yeah, like I have to be out in nature and I have to be surrounded by trees. Without sounding too wanky, I love like I need to be like in a rainforest surrounded by trees sort of thing. That's where I feel like I'm at peace.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I love going on like walks, I love going on hikes, I love exploring and basically like just spending time with my friends. Like I'm in love with all my friends. They're like my favorite people in the world.
Yeah.
So that's anything like just sitting with them and watching TV or like going on doing activities where we like go to paint and sip classes. Recently my best friend and I made Turkish tea lamps.
That was like what are those?
Fun thing to do. And, they're like you put like little glass, you design these little glass, like these images on little tea lamps. I don't know if you've ever seen them. And you just make these like really pretty images and they're all like colorful beads. So then you put like a tea light in it and it's like looks like a disco ball of different colors.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, because I was like, I know what a tea light is. I didn't know. Yeah. I figured it was something like that. Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So hiking and hanging with the friends.
Yeah.
Okay. So of the scripts that you've written, only one of which I saw listed on Coverfly. So I'm curious. But of the scripts that you've written, which is your favorite and why?
Is it
Abigail Franklin? It can be Abigail Franklin. It's okay if it is.
It probably is because, I mean, that's probably my strongest script.
Uh-huh.
And also it's so, like, I wrote it, like, it's the journey that I went on with that script is pretty crazy in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, like, it's everything that I am as a writer as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's probably my most recent one that I am – is my favorite one now, only because I have like such an obsession with like the time before like technology, especially like the 90s and early 2000s, which I know we've spoken about.
Yeah.
Just like how everything felt like sunshine back then. And so my latest one that I'm writing is basically about like a memory to that time. And I think that's probably my most favorite because I don't know, it's just, it's like the whole nostalgia kind of aspect of it, which I think I like. And it's, I find that my writing has matured over time as well. And I think that script kind of shows the maturity of my writing as well.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I feel like most people, it's like the personal one is your favorite. Like for me, my most personal one is a script called Suplex.
And oh, I love that one.
It's definitely my favorite because it's just, it's so much me in it. That I don't know if I'll ever write one that tops that. I might write one that tops it because it feels newer and maybe more, I don't know, commercial or like, you know, whatever. This feels like a real movie, but I don't know if any would ever top that one in terms of just how fucking personal it is, you know?
Yeah, I love that script. And you can tell it's really personal too.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, okay, we know now that it is... Wait, so what's the name of the one that's nostalgic?
I hate naming scripts. At the moment, it's literally called Unnamed Y2K Script.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Yeah. that makes sense. Okay. So, all right. Well, Carly, we've reached the end. Oh, my goodness. We've talked about you and your writing. We've talked about script clearances. We've talked about nature. Mm-hmm. We've talked about screenwriting Twitter drama. We covered all. We covered everything. Okay, we talked about page count and the nickel and slug lines. Okay, so I want to know from you, final question. What are a few words of advice that you would give to your fellow screenwriters out there, especially to those just getting started?
Oh, good question. Be kind to yourself when you're writing. The first draft will not be perfect, and that's okay. Just take it easy, basically. Take your time. It's not a race. It's everyone has their own journey to the finish line. Just, you know, take it easy. That would be mine. And that's one that I've finally applied to myself because I used to rush things and I wanted to get there so quickly. And now I'm like, no, you know, enjoy the now. Write it. The good stuff comes out then, and then eventually your time will come and it'll happen.
That's really good advice. Yeah, it's definitely a marathon. It takes, no matter how long you think it's going to take like 3 or 5 years longer. That's what I'm experiencing right now is like, and I feel like I've been on, you know, not a super long track. I mean, there's some writers who are, you know, 20 years deep and it, a lot of it, you know, a lot of known pros too talk about how, you know, part of it is skill, but so much of it's luck. You know, you wrote the right thing for the right moment and it had the right cast and it just, your career got started.
I agree.
Yeah, a lot of it.
And also don't be discouraged by people who seem to have been like getting there quicker than you are. Like you said, like it's the right place, the right time most of the time. And like, I know at the beginning, I considered everyone kind of like a competition with me. And then like, as I got, I guess like matured and my frontal lobe like formed, I realized, no, everyone's your friend and you write something completely different to the person next to you. And so if you're going for something, your writing might not be the right fit for whatever it is. And that took me a very long time to realize as well. And that like no one's competition, everyone's your friend, your colleague, you're all here together. You're all, we're all sad writers trying to make it.
So true. I totally agree with that. And sometimes too, you know, it's when you get away from your own voice, trying to be something that fits in the box, that you take a really tough detour. I've done that too, where I strayed from my original voice and then I had to go through, you know, a year and a half detour when I could have been writing good shit that's, you know, me. But I was trying to be something else, trying to be commercial or trying to be this or that. And I'm, you know, I think we're all always, at least us indie people, because I think you and I write in a similar lane that's like, we like little small indie stories. And I'm always fighting that battle of wanting to find something. Where does the authenticity of those stories mesh with commerciability. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Commerciality? Is that how you say it? How do I make an indie movie commercial, basically? And I feel like that's the eternal question for so many indie filmmakers. And like, I mean, look at like what Greta Gerwig did, you know, going from like Frances Ha to fucking Barbie.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty insane. Cause I think she's still, even though that was like an existing IP, she still kept, you know, her voice and what makes her Greta Gerwig, even in something that huge and that commercial, which is really impressive.
It is, she's like goals.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, we reached the end. And all great advice, all sound advice. Super cool hearing about your story. And yeah, everyone on Twitter is rooting for you. I don't think you have any enemies.
Oh, thank you. Oh, yay.
Yeah, maybe. That's how I feel, too.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's how I feel, too.
No, I think we're fine. I think we're friends with everyone.
Yeah, we're doing okay. Okay, well, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, y'all. Episode 41 is in the books. I want to thank Carly Agrimito for coming on the show and sharing her knowledge about the craft and about script clearances and her own personal stories. I really, really appreciate it. If you like the episode, please take to Twitter or Instagram and say something smart Carly said, say something dumb that I said. If you're watching on YouTube, please like the video, subscribe, maybe leave a comment, you know, something smart that Carly said, something dumb that I said. Whatever you want to do, you can do. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, you can donate to the podcast if you want to. I wouldn't, you know, if you want to, you could. Go to the link in the Social Writer Pod bio on Twitter, Instagram, and there's a link to donate. I'd really, really appreciate it. And if not, that's okay too. Yeah, guys, like I said, you know, I've been really, really busy just grinding away at the writing thing. I also have those three short films that we shot last year in post-production, trying to push those things through. I'm really curious what it's going to be like to make a film when you have money and resources. That's going to be wild. But until that day, I'm still here trying to like orchestrate all this shit. And if anyone who worked on those movies is listening, I'm not saying I don't appreciate you. I very, very much appreciate you and the work you've done. Just saying, like, it would be crazy to have money and just like, you know, give it all to a studio, a post house, you know, and have them do everything. That would be really nice. A luxury, I tell you, a luxury. But I don't have that luxury right now, and that's okay, because I'm also a firm believer that going through the really, really tough times just makes you stronger and better at your craft. So what I'm saying is, don't write on any kind of actual writing software. Write on Microsoft Notepad or whatever Apple's Notepad is. Write on that. Figure that out. Try to make it look professional. It's going to make you better. I'm just kidding. You don't have to do that. That's bad advice. Okay. That's about it, guys. I'm not going to ramble too long like I usually do, but I already have a new guest for the next episode. We're lining up a date right now, and I'm really, really excited to talk to this person, and I think that you guys will get a lot out of the episode. That's about it. We'll talk to you next time. Okay. Bye-bye. The Social Screenwriters Podcast.